Hello and welcome to cancernursing.org Assessment of Chemotherapy Lecture. My name is Claire Dicken and I'm the Macmillan Senior Chemotherapy Nurse for the Sussex Cancer Network. So today we're going to talk about chemotherapy and the assessment of chemotherapy, and what I hope to achieve today is to highlight some of the patient experiences with chemotherapy and to examine some of the difficulties around professional knowledge and assessment of side effects, and to look at why these occur and how we might address them. I also hope to discuss the importance of a holistic assessment and using a structured approach to assessing symptoms, and to highlight some of the latest drivers around holistic assessment, and hopefully encourage some debate about how assessment is carried out within your area. Just a little bit of background to start with. Chemotherapy is increasing exponentially over the last few years and is set to continue. Chemotherapy is given for the treatment of cancer, and sometimes it's given to cure cancers, mitigate disease effect, or palliate symptoms in advanced disease. Recently, the NCAG report, released last year, highlighted that over the last 4 years, there's been a 60% increase in the use of chemotherapy, and in the oncology pipeline, with all the new drugs, this is set to continue. Treatments are becoming more complex, and there's use of multiple drugs and increasing use of targeted therapies as an adjunct. There's greater use of palliative chemotherapy, so that many of our patients are exposed to a number of lines of different treatment, and also with advanced disease they're presenting with more comorbidities. But we are more successful now in treating cancer, but it does unfortunately come at a cost, as chemotherapy is associated with significant physical and psychological morbidity, and there are a large number of documented side effects. This slide indicates a very small proportion of some of the short and long-term sequelae of chemotherapy. And this slide, you'll note, highlights just the physical side effects. But chemotherapy also has impacts with non-physical side effects. There's psychological effects, social effects, sexual, spiritual and body image issues for patients undergoing chemotherapy, which is sometimes inextricably linked with the diagnosis of cancer. It's well documented that about a third of cancer patients will develop a depressive illness or anxiety disorder following diagnosis. Some research suggests that this is approximately 2 to 3 months following diagnosis, and for quite a number of patients this will coincide with when their chemotherapy treatment is either starting or in the middle of their chemotherapy treatment. And there's a strong association between the number and severity of patients' concerns after diagnosis and the later development of anxiety and depression. The quotation on this slide, I was advised it would be nasty, but it was the range and severity of side effects that upset me the most, was from one of my patients many years ago, and I think it highlights quite nicely the risk that chemotherapy patients have of developing mounting concerns commencing treatment, and therefore the risk of anxiety or depression developing. This problem of many side effects is further compounded by the fact that many patients underreport their side effects. In this slide you can see a number of different reasons for patients underreporting their side effects, and these quotations were from a study that was conducted in the 90s between Bromley Hospital Trust and Worthing and Southlands Hospital Trust. Several studies have shown that patients are highly selective in what they disclose to health professionals, and there's disparity in disclosure not just across professional groups, i.e. doctors and nurses, but importantly between the same professional groups. Factors including influencing disclosure of concerns to nurses include perception of role, time, perception of emotional strength of the nurse, and also the nurse's communication skills. So we know that patients underreport their side effects and they have mounting concerns with chemotherapy, but what does the research say about health professionals? Unfortunately, the major of patients' concerns are not detected by nursing or medical staff. Some studies suggest as few as 20% of concerns are identified. In a study conducted by Farrell et al. In 2004, identifying the concerns of women undergoing chemotherapy, patients expressed 340 concerns, and 80% of these were not identified by the nurses caring for them. This was made more alarming since 36% of patients signalled these nurses as people they believed knew the most about their concerns. The concerns they had related to current illness, the future, inability to do things, physical symptoms, treatments, feeling upset, different, their sexuality, relationship with others, finances, job, and relationship with partners. So there's a wide variety of problems that they felt they had. There's also wide evidence that doctors and nurses demonstrate a bias between physical symptoms and treatment-related concerns, and even these are not always accurately picked up. In a study by Holmes and Edburn, nurses were able to identify distress caused by physical symptoms such as diarrhea and immobility, but were less effective in identifying distress caused by less visible symptoms such as nausea and mood disturbance. Studies into health professional assessment of the control of chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting show large disparities between what the patients are really experiencing and what the health professionals think. Control of nausea and vomiting, nurses thought 69% was controlled, whereas only 53% was controlled. And with vomiting, nurses thought 83% was controlled, where it was only in the 70s. This disparity got worse with delayed symptoms of nausea and vomiting. In a recent study within our network, we looked into our chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting and found with FEC100s, there was 83% of patients were experiencing both delayed and immediate nausea, and we are dealing with that, but it did show that we didn't pick up as many as we thought were occurring. There is a recent study into nausea, and it's viewed nausea as a neglected symptom. But both nurses and physicians in this study were found to underestimate its occurrence, particularly when it was delayed. So there's plenty of evidence to indicate that we underestimate the incidence of side effects, and we probably underestimate the severity of side effects too. If I go back to my patient's quotation about the symptoms being nasty, but it was the range and severity that upset him the most, it shows that we did not prepare him adequately for the severity of side effects, perhaps because we were unaware of the extent of them, and perhaps the severity and how that would impact on him. Another important part of patient assessment is patient understanding, and nurses have also been found to rarely assess the patient's understanding. An important question emerges: why is there such discrepancy between what patients experience and what we think? Farrell, in her study, discussed this issue with the nurses and discovered that assumptions were being made about patient side effects. This may sound shocking, but evidence of similar practices, i.e. guesswork, have been reported in several other papers. There was Higginson and McCarthy in 1993 and Heaven and Maguire in 1997. Other factors might include the environment: busy unit, high patient throughput, not enough staff, short patient stay, not enough privacy. I'm sure for many chemotherapy nurses, this environment sounds quite familiar. Another issue is support and training for staff. But there are two final points which are probably the most instrumental in affecting patient assessment: communication and a lack of system for assessment. Oh, I'm sorry, I've not clicked on my slide. This quotation, communication, is the cornerstone not only to management of anxiety and a number of emotional problems, but also to relief of the symptoms, was written 30 years ago in a communication book about cancer, but it still holds very true today. Communication is what assessment pivots around, and the importance of communication between nurses and patients cannot be overestimated. It is the basis of the therapeutic relationship which successful healthcare depends on. And there's been plenty, particularly over the last 20 years, written around the subject of communication between cancer patients and healthcare professionals. Communication is a vital aspect of nursing care in the oncology setting. There are two types of behaviour employed by nurses which seem to be important in meeting the cognitive and affective needs of the patient. Instrumental behaviours, which are used in information giving, and affective behaviours, which are used in supporting the patient, such as showing respect, giving comfort, helping to build a relationship, and creating a trusting atmosphere which helps the patient to disclose concerns about their disease or treatment. The emotional load in cancer nursing, along with the previously mentioned environmental factors, can make communication with our patients difficult at the best of times. What's evidenced from the research is that nurses employ more negative blocking behaviours than positive facilitative ones. These are characterised by giving lots of medical information, failing to establish what the patient understands about their illness and treatment, greater emphasis on physical care and treatment-related problems, and the use of closed questions, and not being able to assess the patient's problems and failing to get patients to disclose their feelings. Positive facilitative behaviours have been found to achieve more in-depth assessment of behaviours. An imbalance between effective and instrumental behaviours have been linked with patient dissatisfaction. Satisfaction with nursing care is vital, as sometimes, as nurses, we can make patients feel better when they don't always get better. Having a sense of confidence in one's ability to communicate openly is also essential for successful communication. Wilkinson, in 1991, found that nurses who lack confidence in their ability to talk openly were less likely to employ communication skills known to increase patient self-disclosure. Variation in nurses' communication skills have been linked with poor individual assessment. It is often difficult to see the world through other people's eyes. Many side effects are subjective and conveyed to the health professional using language, and there are inherent difficulties with this, even within the context of a common language. Words have different meanings for different people, and they rely on nuances for meanings to be understood. From a patient's perspective, there are two needs which must be met during an information exchange with a provider: the need to know and understand, and feel known and understood. And it is this last part that is linked with a holistic approach in nursing. Holism is a theory that certain wholes are greater than the sum of individual parts. In nursing, we aim not just to treat the symptoms of the disease or treatment, but its impact on the person as a whole, their psychological, social and sexual well-being, and more recently more emphasis being placed on spiritual effects. If we think of spirituality, what is it? It's a cardinal feature of human life and relates to an individual's capacity to seek meaning and purpose in life. Religious beliefs are a little bit different, and they're a subset of the spiritual domain, but they play a significant part in how some patients cope with disease and treatment and how they make sense of what's happening to them. The holistic approach aims to establish how the treatment impinges on the person's quality of life. It encompasses the importance of subjective meanings that individuals give to their experiences, which can help them to cope. Many patients following a diagnosis will question life and death and what that means to them at some stage, and they may review what their life has meant and what importance it had to them, and their hopes and fears. And patients need support to work through these kind of profound thoughts, and oncology nurses are well placed to do this. Adopting a holistic approach should include sexuality, and this is an area avoided by many healthcare professionals, as they feel ill-prepared to deal with any issues that may arise. By adopting the implicit model of care, many patient concerns can be dealt with by ward nurses using the first three stages. And the implicit model of care uses permission to talk, limited information, specific suggestions, and intensive therapy. And if we can first give the patients permission to talk, we can open up how they're feeling and start to understand what we need to do to help them. What is imperative in a holistic assessment is not to make assumptions about how the individual is coping or feeling, but to concentrate the problems in a patient-focused way. For example, not how severe the symptom may be, but how much it is troubling them. So, for example, somebody who's lost their hair may have lost all their hair, so it's severe, but it doesn't bother them. And for some patients, they might lose a little hair, which isn't severe, but it does bother them a lot. So we need to concentrate on the symptoms that are bothering patients the most. What is important is in maintaining an open dialogue with the patients. That is, as I've already mentioned, giving them permission to talk. The latest manual of Cancer Services Quality Measures, against which the peer review process is based, has charged us with carrying out a holistic assessment prior to each course of chemotherapy. And there's other national guidance, such as the Unified Approach to Assessment and the Holistic Assessment Guidelines, which are national documents, which also are guiding us towards ensuring we have a holistic approach to assessment. So how do we best achieve this and prove evidence that it's occurring in a consistent manner? A way forward is trying to reduce some of the variables in communication and to ensure that assessment occurs in a regular and systematic way. And to do this, we would need to use reliable and valid assessment tools. The use of assessment tools can help to create a common language. And we need to remember that in chemotherapy, things are not always what they seem. Here's the peer review measures. So for those who don't know, it's C135 to C136. Sorry, my slides seem to have got a little bit muddled up here, so we'll just carry on. This previous slide here was just a bit of humour to sort of show things are not always what they seem. So we've got a cow sitting on an electric fence swinging, saying, if it was electric, could I do this? And the man in the background about to switch it on. But in chemotherapy, I think we do have to realise that some of the patients can present as if everything's okay. And if we don't question them enough, then we may never get to the bottom of how they're feeling. So if we look at the importance of systematic assessment, so we've talked about communication and the importance of communication and how difficult it is because there's lots of variables with communication and language, and that we can use, if we use a systematic form of assessment, we can help to reduce some of those variables. So if we look at a systematic approach, we can see that chemotherapy nurses in their day-to-day activities with the patients are in a strategic position to assess and intervene and meet both the psychological and physical needs of patients undergoing chemotherapy. Symptom assessment is an essential part of our role as a chemotherapy nurse, and we need to utilise it to its fullest potential. Thorough assessment is the first step in effective communication management, and often informal assessment or the use of checklists whose reliability or validity have not been established are most commonly used. And this form of assessment results in inconsistencies and problems often being overlooked. It fails to elicit patient concerns effectively and is particularly poor in establishing psychosocial or sexual problems. Patients should be central to the process of assessment, and self-reporting should be encouraged with inclusion of symptom severity, as this sometimes can sometimes be a predictor of patient functioning. Structured symptom assessment allows more accurate identification of problems. Structured symptom assessment has been viewed by chemotherapy patients as having a positive impact on their care, as it results in a greater awareness of the patient's symptom experience and better communication. And this has been seen in the WISE Care project, which was a project started in the 90s looking at patient reporting using telephone technology, and I will mention this a little bit later. And what they found in their project was actually there was better symptom management through using this approach. So using a systematic approach to assessment, we have more accurate problem identification, which does have an impact on patient care. If we look at symptomatic assessment, there's a huge number of assessment tools available for use. French did a study and discovered that there are 119 formal measurement tools for measuring patient outcome, but not all of those are chemotherapy specific. It would be interesting to hear from perhaps the forum later on how many of you use a systematic assessment tool and how useful you find it. There was a study that wasn't published by Brown and Harlow in the 90s, and they asked a number of chemotherapy units across the whole of the United Kingdom if they used any form of systematic assessment. About 80% said that they did, but that the most common assessment form was a checklist, which I've already explained, they're not usually valid or reliable. And they also don't have a scoring system, so they're not suitable for measuring change over time or seeing whether or not an intervention has been successful. Checklists are normally also completed by a nurse, and already we've kind of talked about the importance of patients being involved in the reporting rather than it being nurse orientated. Another form of common assessment with research nurses and physicians are toxicity rating scales. Often these are limited to some of the most common problems and generally assess the severity of the symptom rather than how much it affects the patient. Research scales also exist, but some of these are very cumbersome and not appropriate for general clinical use. There are several individual assessment scales available. the OAG, the Oral Assessment Guide, there's visual analog scales, and there's the MAIN, which is a nausea and vomiting reporting scale. But these are only for one specific symptom, and they're not holistic in their approach. There's also a large number of assessment tools that are available in assessing quality of life and psychological distress. For example, the Karnofsky Performance Scale, which looks at their overall performance, the Rotterdam Symptom Checklist. There's a number of these, the Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale as well. But these are not appropriate for repeated use in chemotherapy patients, and they don't go into the symptoms that chemotherapy often gives. And these scales obviously vary tremendously in their suitability for holistic assessment. The WISE Care project was set up in 1997, and this is specifically for chemotherapy patients. It was completed in December 2003, and there is a final report from its website if you Google the WISE Care project. 7 countries were involved across the whole of Europe, and the project aimed to influence clinical practice in the chemotherapy setting by integrating structured patient assessment, evidence-based practice, and information technology. Patients reported their symptoms initially using a paper questionnaire, and further into the project, teleinformatics were used so that the patients could report their symptoms through a telephone and then email them to the nurse caring for them. The project made a significant impact in the clinical areas involved, and the instant feedback and use of systematic assessment facilitated better understanding of the symptoms experienced by patients, and the more proactive approach helped to reduce some of the symptoms that the patients were experiencing, and there weren't so many admissions. But having the luxury of an IT system such as this isn't available to all of us. And the WISE Care project was based on the CSAS tool, which is the Chemotherapy Symptom Assessment Scale. And this is the only self-report assessment scale designed specifically for routine use across a large range of disease types and chemotherapy regimes. It's undergone a process of development very rigorous, far more rigorous than a lot of scales, and is undergone psychometric testing so that it's been now known as to be reliable and valid. The idea for its development came from chemotherapy nurses, so there was a bottom-up approach to its development, and patients were involved in its development as well. So some of the questions on the chemotherapy symptom assessment scale are there because the patients wanted them there. There are 24 questions, including a psychosexual assessment, plus there's room for any extra symptoms the patient may have experienced. Currently, spirituality is not addressed, but a question can be added to the scale. It addresses not just symptom severity, but also how much the symptom troubles the patient. And there's a nursing action plan which assists not only in better patient-nurse communication, but in better side effect management. And in the document, the patients have actually been quite impressed because they feel, with the action side, that they feel that people are actually doing something about the side effect. The chemotherapy assessment scale is designed for multidisciplinary use, but currently it tends to be used just for nurses. And it fits on one sheet of paper, and it is easy for use. Within our network in Sussex, we use the chemotherapy symptom assessment scale. But we are aware that there are other methods for assessment. In some areas, telephone assessments have been set up by chemotherapy nurses to proactively monitor patients. So the chemotherapy symptom assessment scale that we use at the moment, we use it retrospectively to assess how they've been feeling since their last chemotherapy. But a telephone clinic is a more proactive approach to monitoring symptoms. For some of these clinics, they do use the chemotherapy symptom assessment scale, but have adapted it to include the national toxicity criteria so that any dose reductions can be then made along those lines, changing the patient-reported symptom into a national toxicity criteria so that there's a sort of scale that the nurses can use. And in the UK and Scotland, we have the use of teleinformatics. There's two models currently available, the ASIMS, which is being adopted across Scotland, and the Oxford model, which I believe is in the three counties. And these two methods of assessment use a telephone technology. The patient receives a telephone. They report their symptoms daily on the telephone, and when they reach a critical level, an automatic email is sent to the nurses in the chemotherapy unit, who pick up that symptom, then phone the patient, and the symptom is then acted upon. And this is probably the way forward in developing our assessment for patients further. I think it's important at this stage to recognise that there's been two major reports in chemotherapy that were released last year. The NCPOD report, which is the National Confidential Inquiry into Patient Outcome and Death, was released in November 2008, and they found that there were patients dying from the toxicities that they experienced in chemotherapy. One of the problems was that patients were delaying their reporting their grade 3 and 4 toxicities. And if we can develop a more proactive approach to monitoring side effects in chemotherapy patients, we may well help to reduce the death rate that is occurring from chemotherapy. The other thing that there are a number of findings in the NCPOD report. Again, it can be Googled under NCPOD and you'll be able to get the report. There's 150 pages to that report. But the patients that were dying, sometimes it was due to toxicities not being properly managed, for example, neutropenic sepsis. And if we can improve our assessment of patients and management of their toxicities, we will then improve the outcome for these patients. The other report that's important is the National Chemotherapy Advisory Group report, and that was released in draft form last year, November 2008, and the finalised report is about to be released in the next couple of weeks. And this report has recommended a more proactive way of managing side effects, and again, assessment of side effects will be crucial in the more proactive management of side effects. And it's also recommending the development of acute oncology. So we've got some major developments that will be occurring in chemotherapy where our ability to assess the patients and respond to their symptoms will be key in improving their outcomes. So just to summarise, chemotherapy nurses, because this is talking primarily about chemotherapy assessment, but I'm sure many of the issues can be taken out and used in other nursing sort of strands, such as oncology nursing. But chemotherapy nurses are there to assist patients in coping, and to be able to do that, we need to understand exactly what they're experiencing, and we need to be able to assess them in a systematic way, because that helps to reduce the variables in picking up whether or not they're experiencing side effects. Regular and accurate monitoring is essential in being able to manage the side effects, and self-reporting by the patient should be encouraged to reduce any lack of disclosure that occurs. And we also need to understand the impact that the disease has on, and its treatment on the patient, not just what their disease is and what the treatment is, but the impact it has perhaps as an illness for the patient. And proactive management is going to be the way forward rather than retrospectively managing patients' side effects. I hope you've enjoyed this presentation, and if you've got any questions, perhaps you can put them onto the forum.